Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Elder Dick Dirksen. He is affectionately called the itinerant pollinator of grace.
That's true.
He's currently employed.
The first time somebody described me that way, I thought, finally, I know what it is I do.
That's a great, great title. You're currently employed by Maranatha Volunteers International as their storyteller.
Correct.
And we're going to kind of center our conversation today around this. Tell us a little bit about your family and the journey that has brought you to have such an affectionate title as in Pollinator of Grace.
Oh, my. When I was in academy, I had a Bible teacher, Jake Duran, who the first day of class, and he showed up in the middle of the year, and he sat down on the desk and said, you know, I don't know anything about teaching Bible. All I can do is introduce you to my best friend, Jesus Christ. And Jake's inspiration really focused me on grace as the cornerstone of Christianity. Good friend, still to this day, and inspiration is the best word I can give. Met my wife at La Sierra. She was taking nursing at Loma Linda, and I was finishing my theology degree at La Sierra. We got married when she completed her nursing degree, and that was 42 years ago.
Congratulations.
Isn't that just amazing? And we're both still alive, and we can take nourishment. It's really quite cool. We have three children. At this point, they are 32, 34, and 36, and scattered in Colorado, Redlands, California, and New Zealand.
We're speaking with someone who's very creative. I would say you're an abstract random.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems is I'm on the road so much, I don't know where I am today much of the time. First thing I do every morning is say, where is this bed?
Bless your heart. What a testimony to a love for Jesus and knowing that this world isn't our home.
No.
That we're just passing through.
No.
Now, for our young listeners, we like to have a story every show. So we're going to play one of your stories.
Okay.
And when we come back, then I have some more questions.
Awesome.
Our story today comes from Genesis chapter 37, all 36 verses. The first section, of course, is Joseph at home. There's this wonderful tent city. It's not really a city. It's just a whole bunch of tents where there's a herd of people with a herd of animals all around it. There's camels over here. There's livestock over there. There's goats and sheep and probably some dogs running around taking care of all of the different animals, too. But in one of the big tents, a tent which is made of skins of animals lashed tightly down to tree trunks that hold them all up. Underneath that tent, something's going on. It's breakfast time, early morning. There's brothers and sisters, and it looks like there's some cooks and some of the herders, and they're all having breakfast when all of a sudden this young boy walks in and says, "Hello, everybody. I had a dream last night. Do you want to hear my dream?" And several of the younger men, those who obviously are his brothers, put their heads in their hands and say, "Oh, no, not again. Daddy's little pet is going to tell us his dream again." It's obvious that none of them like him at all. In fact, there's probably not anybody in that tent except father and an even younger boy who's Benjamin that even like this guy. But there he is, Joseph. "I want to tell you my dream." And Joseph, the spoiled brat of the house, begins to tell his dream. "Yes, I was out in the fields, and I was working with you, and we were gathering the sheaves of grain." There's laughter throughout the tent. They all know that Joseph's skin is not as dark as theirs, because he doesn't spend time outside working. His father leaves him inside. He's father's pet. Father doesn't want anything to happen to you. You never even get outside to work. How could you be outside working? Be quiet. I'm going to tell you my dream. And he proceeds to tell the dream how his collection of grain, which he stood up in a big sheaf, stands straight and tall. But the sheaves of all of his brothers and his father all bowed down to his sheaf of grain. The brothers, just like a whole crowd of enemies, stand up, laugh at him, shout at him, and storm out of the tent, leaving Joseph to eat breakfast alone with his father and the servants. It happens again just a few days later. He walks in to the midst of a meal, this time an evening meal, and he says, "I had another dream last night." One of the brothers stands up and walks out of the tent in anger. A couple others just lean back and say, "All right, tell us, what is it this time?" And even his father seems a little bit irritated. "Yeah, tell me, what is your dream this time, Joseph?" "Well, I was outside and it was night. And you see, I was standing there and all of a sudden, all of the stars, I think that's you, my brothers, and the moon and everything bowed down to me." And this time, even his father got upset. But a few days later, his father, doing his very best to let everyone know that it was okay for Joseph to be Joseph and that he really did like him better than everybody else, called everyone into the tent. And instead of having a meal this time, father said, "All right, I want you all to help me. We are going to celebrate Joseph's birthday. Joseph, come here." And everybody watched. And everybody was envious. And everybody was unhappy and uncomfortable because father gave Joseph a coat. A coat with long sleeves, like the coats of the princes, the sons of the kings. A coat bright with many colors, like the coat of one who will be king. Everybody applauded. "Oh, that's really nice, Joe." And then everybody went away, angry at father and angrier at Joseph. For the one who was spoiled rotten, father's special little boy, was getting on everybody's nerves.
Okay. Who is your favorite Bible character?
I ought to say Jesus. That's the correct answer.
Other than Jesus?
Probably Moses.
Moses.
Moses, why? Because he, you know, he's known as the meekest man who ever lived. But there were many times in his life when he was anything but meek. And knowing how to make your personality fit the needs of the moment and still be God's child is something that I see Moses did very well.
Now, I've heard you talk about Moses, and you mentioned that he was homeschooled,
mm-hmm.
and how that homeschooling impacted his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty neat because sometimes the homeschooling community feels a little isolated or mm-hmm. maybe looked down upon. So that's very affirming. Now, how did you get the name Story Catcher?
Story Catcher, Storyteller, I think just over the years, it has become a habit in my life to listen for information that when I hear a story, when I hear an experience, when I listen to someone talk, my head says, "Man, I understand God better by knowing that story." And then I'm always thinking, "Oh, that's something I've got to tell my wife." And if it does those two things, it's a story worth catching. And it's a story worth telling because it will
yes.
impact others the way it has impacted me. So I'm always looking.
Now, when I think of storytelling and technology, so many people have gotten sucked into thinking that they need to enhance their stories with a lot of pictures or illustrations. But your style doesn't include that. Have you consciously made that decision, or it just kind of it's not your style?
I'll give you two or three ways to answer that. One is it's very easy. I'm a photographer. A
yes,
professional photographer.
Yes.
I have big cameras, and they're way too heavy. I do lots of photography for lots of different things, and I am convinced that I can tell stories as well with pictures as I can with words. And my actual job title is Storyteller, Words and Pictures, mm-hmm. Words and Photographs. So I do use the both together a lot. When I preach, I don't as much. And the reason I don't is the technology in most of the churches I work in is so bad that it detracts from the process. The pictures are not the right color. The projector is not strong enough. The audio and the projector don't mix. You know, there's just always something wrong. And unless I can control that totally myself, I don't trust to use it. And so I've had to fall back on picture words, which do just as well in many cases.
Yes, they do. Now, I also have noticed in your presentations that you're very quick on the draw, like when the microphones don't work and you might sound like Donald Duck to the audience. You know how to just... Now, is that something that's an innate ability, or did you actually consciously say, okay, I need to be ready when these kinds of unforeseen things happen?
Somewhere in my past, it was, all right, I have to be ready. And I had a marvelous professor in college who helped me with a lot of things that I chuckle because I still use her counsel in speech class every day. It's just really excellent. Hannah Hogstotz. She was a marvelous person. But no, I don't think about it anymore. It's automatic.
Well, what was her counsel? Because now I'm...
Her counsel was, be alert to everything around you. You're not telling you're preaching, but the way to impact people's lives the best is not with a collection of texts. It's not with a string of things you need to know or a bunch of facts. It's not even the 3 points in a story. It's 3 stories for 1 point. Because if you tag those stories so you reach the different personality types, the different ways people think, I'm using some that are for right brains. I'm using some that are for left brain. I'm very carefully packaging information so that that story is going to be remembered. And when it's remembered, it will have stuck into a left or right brain in the person who's heard it. And therefore, it's there. And when it's needed, it'll come back. And it'll do that for the rest of their life. A good story is permanent as long as people are still around.
I have to smile because when you connect the humor to it, I mean, these serious topics.
Humor is Velcro.
That's right.
Humor is the Velcro on a story. If a story has a little bit of a chuckle in it, that's literally like putting a slab of Velcro on it, and it sticks more firmly. And that's just true.
That is.
And so I have spent a lot of time studying people who use humor to communicate truth or to change attitudes. And I'm a believer that you have to do that carefully and wisely because it is incredibly powerful.
Amen.
You know who used to be able to do it really probably as well as anyone ever in the United States is Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
The couple of times I was with him, he always was carrying the 3x5 cards in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And if he would get in a situation where he had to do a speech on the instant or was going to talk to firemen, he would reach into his pocket, pull out those cards, sort them a little bit, drop most of them back, keep two, and that's what he would work off of because he was prepared with targeted storytelling to be able to change attitudes.
Well, we're going to have to take a break here, but we'll be right back.
Mama! Mama! Where are you? Mama.
We're visiting an orphanage in Zimbabwe, Africa. In this area, 1 in 5 children are orphans, and 100 babies become HIV positive every day. Paula Lean, a tall, soft-spoken American woman, does what she can to not only provide for the orphans, but to help the community people as well. I can't say no and watch a child die, she says. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I've chosen Restore a Child as the humanitarian organization I'm going to support.
To make a donation, go to www.restoreachild.org or call 877-745-7833. That's 877-745-7833.
Hi, Joy Michaels. Welcome to Heartbeat. One of my favorite songs is The Best Is Yet to Come, which was the last song Frank Sinatra sang in public. He had the words inscribed on his tombstone. Recently, there has been some criticism of the idea of heaven, that if it's all white robes and praising Jesus, it will be boring. Like the song, I think the best is yet to come. God, who created all of the beauty of the earth, will reserve even more beauty for eternity. The Bible tells us that Jesus Christ is preparing a place for us. When we choose Him as our Savior, we enter into God's best. It is and will be more than we could ever ask for or imagine. Heartbeat is brought to you by the Salvation Army.
Now, in Maranatha International, you often go with mission groups, and there's young people there. How important is it for a young person to be involved in mission?
In our America, if our young people are not involved in some kind of personal outreach and service, they're going to be materialistic snobs. And it's just, it's going to be awful.
Yes. You know,
we are building a nation of people who know themselves and care about themselves, and we don't care about anybody else. Mission outreach, short-term mission projects, long-term student missionary outreach, anything like that. It can be in your community, it can be in your state, it can be in your country, it can be anywhere in the world, whatever you're able and financially capable of doing, depending on age and many other things. That will change you as a young person. It will shift your focus from yourself to others. And when that happens, according to Matthew 25, you become more like Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And there's, in the secular world, there's statistics indicating that those children are less prone to addictive and high-risk behavior. So
all the good stuff happens when you do service. All the bad stuff happens when you choose to serve yourself. It's just true.
Okay, it's simple as that.
It really is. And the best place to see that in Scripture is Colossians chapter 3. It's very clear.
Now, do you have any, do you minister to these young people at all? Do you get to tell them some of your wonderful stories?
My life is so weird right now. My main responsibility at Maranatha is to host a television show. And so when I travel, I'm usually in and out in 3 to 4 days. And in that process, we will have taped 1, 2, maybe 3 television half hours. Maranatha Mission Stories, which you can get, of course, on 3ABN, on Hope, or on the internet, maranatha.org. That's the easiest place to watch. Everything we've ever videotaped that we
now
have
say it,
produced.
Repeat that one more time.
So Maranatha.
Maranatha.org.
MARANATHA.org. And you go there, you can see any of the videos that we've produced. Lots of stories, some of them very short. We do a lot of 3, 6, and 12-minute pieces, and then all the half-hour shows are there, too.
And so they feature the countries that you're in, the projects that you're doing.
Yeah, and you can sort it by anything you want. You can sort it by project. You can sort it by country. You can sort it by theme. It's just
This is a fantastic resource for educators, for homeschoolers.
If I were a homeschool teacher, if I were mom or dad, I would say, all right, we're going to do one of these 3 times a week, and kids choose which one.
Yes.
And let them go on the internet and choose the ones they want, because here is a positive spiritual resource that focuses heart and mind outside of self onto others, provides simple, creative ways for people to get involved. If you get a chance and go on there, watch the little video, Brown Eggs and Steel. It's perfect to help children, homeschool kids, sense the value of outreach and service.
Fantastic.
Now, but you asked me a question I didn't answer, and that is, do I get a chance to minister? Not as much as I used to. I do speak at most Adventist colleges in the United States every couple years at least, and I still do some weeks of prayer for hospitals and high schools. Next year, well, in 2012. I got to get this right. I have a week of prayer that I'm doing for all Adventist education in North America.
Okay.
So that will be available for homeschoolers too.
Yes.
Yeah, it's never as much as I'd like. but I am no longer a youth director or a high school principal or
I wanted to ask you about your professional journey, all of the different...
Yeah, I couldn't keep a job. So I've got all kinds of fun things.
Well, that gives people courage right now in this in this society where it's hard to get a job.
It's been interesting. You know, I've been married for 42 years, and I have been an ordained pastor for like 38 of those, 39, I don't remember. But Brenda and I have committed years ago that our life is going to be involved with children, young adults, spiritual ministry, and service. And that's where we spend our heart and soul and time. Started as a pastor in the Arizona Conference, taught Bible academies, pastored academy churches, was a college recruiter for PUC and Union College in Lincoln, Nebraska. By the time I was through, I've been vice president of colleges for 10 years, vice president of two unions in the United States, total of 10 years, and vice president of Florida Hospital for 9 years. And, you know, when I look back at it, I did the same thing in all those jobs. I just was doing different administrative tasks to justify developing spiritual relationships and helping people see Jesus.
The pollinator of grace.
Itinerant, yes.
Yes, itinerant pollinator.
Yeah, it's an important word. It's important to leave that in there, yeah. I have a good friend who is a homeschool resource director. In fact, she now has developed a school that has 300 children, homeschool children, in the part of the United States where she lives. And she has 28 teachers. And each of them teaches a different subject. And those children, as part of their homeschooling, according to that state, need to be registered in a real school. Well, hers is the real school. And these 28 teachers supplement whatever home is able to do. Mm-hmm. And their education, you know, one of them is Civil War history. Another one is fur traders in the Rockies. Another one is how to make Zuni pottery. Another one is a flute choir. And the lady teaches flutes, and she's got 28 kids in there. They were just banshees on flutes. Find something like that. Mm-hmm. Get involved in a much bigger community. And it needs to be with people who are not like you, because the world is not like you, and your kids need to learn how to adapt.
That's fantastic advice. I thank you so much for being with us, and we'll keep in touch. That website again is Maranatha.
Maranatha.org.
Maranatha.org.
And we have an iPhone app. You can pick that up on the Apple iStore. And you can also catch us on the internet, and you'll find us on Facebook.
Great resource.
And you can even Twitter us if you want. So come along.
Great. Thank you. And we have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. We would also like to thank our production staff and the various networks for making this broadcast possible. For more information, go to myhomeschoolcompanion.com. That's myhomeschoolcompanion.com.